Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I'm Sam Legasek.
And I'm Dreadful Dan Gallagher. And we're two old buddies that have lived our life at the edge of the mainstream.
So come join us where things are a little odd.
This is the
This earth of yours will be reduced to a burned-out cinder.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to Oddcast Movies, Music, and Gaming. And here with me, as always, is Dreadful Dan. Hi, Dreadful Dan.
We're morons, welcome to our mobile home. Just so damn catchy, that song. I love it.
So, hello. Before we get into this, when you sent me that, I mean, obviously I heard this track at the end of the film when it comes up. When you sent me the music video, I want to say I've watched that music video now about 40 to 50 times. for many reasons. One being, it is a very catchy song, and I don't know why it's catchy, because it's dire, but it is catchy. And
undeniably catchy.
And secondly, the music video is just fucking weird. It's just ridiculous. So for those who don't know, we're talking about is it 1985, I want to say?
Yes.
A movie, Morons from Outer Space. So, Morons from Outer Space, I'd never heard of this before until you brought it up to me the other day and stuck it on the list. Then we had a bit of a chat about it last week. Just why? Just take me through it. How did you hear about it? Everything.
I did see it probably in the late 80s on VHS. And then I forgot about it completely. And what happened was, a few years ago, a friend of mine bought me a last-minute birthday present. And he said he went in the BFI, British Film Institute's shop on the South Bank, and he was looking around, and he saw a book called The Forgotten Film Club by John Spearer. And he thought, that looks like a good sort of book for Dan, probably about obscure film. What he hadn't realised was that it's The Forgotten Film Club, book one. specifically and exclusively on the subject of morons from outer space. I've had it sitting around for a while, and it was during lockdown. I picked it up and had a read. And it's a brilliant book. So, you know, I read it without watching the film. You don't have to be a fan of the film to enjoy the book, because it's actually more about this guy who is involved in the film industry as a critic and a producer, I think. And he does bits of work for BFI. And it's kind of him exploring why does he love this film so much? And I think it's quite interesting for him, because it's difficult, because, you know, when you love something so much, but then because it's his career as well, he feels a bit embarrassed about it, and he has to be careful, like, introducing it to people. And it's just a really interesting kind of look at, I think, obsession as well, nostalgia. There's some great bits where he's getting, like, more and more into it and going deeper and deeper down the rabbit hole. And, you know, for me as a record collector, there were some of those bits where I really saw myself in what he was doing, his behavior. And there's bits where he, like, pauses and goes, what am I doing at 3 o'clock in the morning waiting for this auction, online auction, to, like, bid on an obscure morons from outer space poster? But yeah, in his investigations, he tries to find out more and more, because he's kind of going, like, this was a big film. You know, this is a big budget production, a vehicle for two of Britain's, at the time, most successful and popular comedians, the double act, Smith and Jones. And it seems to be completely forgotten about. So it's kind of a bit of like a dig around, just trying to find out information to sate his own curiosity. And he kind of wonders, like, what went wrong with this film? Why is it so, you know, why was it so poorly received? Why does it continue to be, you know, just sort of languishing in obscurity? And all of it actually led him to, finally, the culmination of the book, he manages to get an interview with Griff Rhys-Jones, who has never really gone on record and said anything about the film. So that was really interesting, and I really, you know, I came away, I really, really, really enjoyed the book. And of course, then naturally, it made me want to go and watch the film. And yeah, that is why we are sitting here today, ready to talk about it.
You put me through this. Yeah. I should say that, yeah, for people that don't know, Dan touched on it there, but yeah, so Smith and Jones, double act, well known during the 80s here in Britain. And on a personal note, they set up a company called Talkback, which after a few years became basically merged and became Talkback Thames. And then that was bought by Fremantle. And I worked for Talkback Thames. And there, I remember pictures of Smith and Jones up in the offices there on...
Really?
Oh my God, what was the name of the road? Anyway, Central, literally just off Oxford Street. And is it Newman? I don't think it was Newman Street, but anyway, whatever. So I actually, like, in a way, worked for these guys. They were well out of it by then. And yeah, I think Will Smith was probably dead by that point. I can't remember. But yeah, they were mostly known in through being on a show called Not the 9 o'clock News. Or at least how they began, as part of that ensemble, which had, like, Rowan Atkinson on, who obviously became Mr. Bean, who is more popular outside of Britain, I swear, than inside. It feels like everyone goes, oh yeah, Mr. Bean. It's like, Mr. Bean is not really a big deal in England whatsoever. He was in the 90s for like a hot 5 minutes, yes. He's more of a British export. The eccentricity of how people see British people. But Not the 9 o'clock News, and it was basically a sketch show that had some, you know, it was all kinds of different stuff, but it was a bit of like social political commentary as well, in a probably more of a lighthearted way. I remember, so doing kind of a bit of research for this, I saw a sketch where they did a bit of a Cassette Boy, or like a Vic Berger thing, whereby they mashed up, they edited, like a politician at the time, I had no idea who it was. It was probably the prime minister or something back then. God fucking knows. And they matched it as if he was like singing in a band, and because it just, his lips were moving, just kind of the same way and something like that. And I thought, oh, that's quite funny. Stupid stuff like that.
Yeah.
I was like, yeah, that's what people do like right now. That's still relevant. Like, you know, what people find funny today. But yeah, it was that general like 80s, you know, sketch show. But that was kind of better than the rest, I would say. It was, you look back on it now and I think a lot of the stuff still stands up. And yeah, Rowan Atkinson, Mel Smith, Griff Rhys-Jones were basically kind of like the stars, I would say.
And Pamela Stevenson.
That's right, yeah. Was Robbie Coltrane in Not the 9 o'clock News?
No, it's just four of them.
What did Robbie Coltrane, where did he start? I can't remember.
He was just in that kind of whole comic strip kind of club,
I thought he was in Not the 9 o'clock News as well. I mean, obviously not then. So yeah, I hadn't heard of this film, seen this film or anything. And it was weird to watch this. It was also a bit sad because after doing a bit of digging on, because Griff Rhys-Jones still randomly turns up in, like, you still hear him, his name pops up in some stuff every now and then. But Mel Smith, he basically his heart gave out, which is not really much of a surprise. But he, like, I feel like this was him at his peak, like physically, like looks wise. It seemed like he went off a fucking hill, off a cliff. But I mean, after this, and you see like he gets worse and worse as the years kind of go on, as opposed to Griff Rhys-Jones, who kind of, you know, we're saying how he's like bald now, but he didn't really age that badly over the years like Mel Smith did.
I think he's got shaved head rather than bald.
Oh, I don't know.
He looks like a bit of a neo-Nazi. Anyway,
he's taken the jump. So yeah, what should we do? Should we kind of go into the film itself? We can kind of talk through what happens and the problems I had with it, and then just do a bit of a
the problems I had with it.
Yeah, do a bit of an analysis as we go, and then yeah, talk about it a bit more afterwards. Okay, let's do that then. All right, so let's take a bit of a break, and yeah, we'll start talking about the actual film itself.
Well, shall I just give an overview of? Shall I just give a little bit of an overview?
Yeah, give a bit of a general overview, because I didn't know anything about it. So I should say, like, I literally thought this would be Spaceballs, and apparently Spaceballs was going to be called Planet Moron, and they changed it because of this film.
Oh, really?
His name, apparently. But I thought it was just going to be like these idiots going around space, getting into these madcap adventures, and it wasn't that. at all. So yeah, sorry, give a general overview. So
funnily enough, they do mention Spaceballs, don't they, in one of the opening scenes. I think possibly that's where Mel Brooks took the term from.
Oh really? I don't remember that.
Yeah, I think he goes, I'm popping out to play Spaceball.
Oh, that's right.
And that's when he is left languishing in space. So anyway, getting into the details. Yeah, after Not the 9 o'clock News, Smith and Jones span out into their own double act, and they were really big on, you know, one of, I think what at that point was three channels available to British viewers. Although by the time this film was released, there were four. But, you know, they were prime time, one of the biggest comedy double acts in the UK, and this was meant to be the vehicle to bring them to the silver screen. So keep that in mind, because, you know, that in itself is strange when you consider some of the decisions they've made in writing and producing this movie. So this was directed by Mike Hodges. Is that a name familiar to you, Sam?
Only afterwards when I looked it up and saw that he'd done like Get Carter. And a few other bits which did well, basically.
Yeah, Flash Gordon.
Yes, so that's the big one. Sorry, not Get Cut. For me, it was Flash Gordon, which makes sense.
Yeah.
In hindsight, I was like, oh, okay, this is the film that Flash Gordon... Sorry, this could have been what Flash Gordon was. Flash Gordon.
But one thing that strikes me about that is that he doesn't really have a track record in comedy.
Mm.
So I think, We don't know. Flash Gordon could have a track record in comedy. We're just basing our assumptions on what we saw in that 90-minute movie about him.
I think Flash Gordon could be a comedy.
Could be a comedy god. Is that? Oh, I thought you meant the man.
No.
The man himself.
The film. No, he doesn't exist, Dan. He was a character.
He does exist because I've seen the documentary about his life.
If you watched, he was in Ted. Do you remember Ted? That's a shitty comedy film.
What about the Catholic priest on an
Father
island?
Father Ted. Not allowed to talk about Father Ted anymore. Graham Linehan.
Oh, right. Yeah, okay.
Can't do that. Bear in mind, I worked with Graham Linehan. There was one time when, I'll tell you a story. It's an anecdote for you. When I was working on IT Crowd, we had a medic there. And basically when you're on these shoots, the medic is literally just sits around, and if anything happens, then he's the first responder, basically. But obviously, like 99.9% of the time, they're just sitting there, or they might give out like paracetamol or something like that. And anyway, he was chatting to Graham. And that's always a little bit like, you know, you're chatting to the director, the medic, it's like, you know, give him some space, mate. He's got other things to like think about, whereas you're just like looking for a chat. And he was telling Graham how when the Father Ted guy died, he was the medic on the scene, basically. And when apparently, for I don't know how the Father Ted guy died, if it was on set or whatever at home, but anyway, this is what he was telling Graham. And he said, oh, and I went into work the next day and all the people had written on my locker, Father Ted murderer, you killed Father Ted and all this stuff. And he was like laughing about it.
What?
And Graham went back to production crew and basically was like, you know, I heard all this like third hand. I wasn't there, but basically put it this way, the medic wasn't there the next day. And Graham's not usually, I know he's got, I'm not going to go into that because that's a whole can of worms at the moment. It would have been out of character for him to say, get this man off my set, but he definitely would have had a word about it, that something like, I don't want him to talk to me or something like that. So they probably would have just got rid of him. Because obviously like Graham and him were mates, like,
yeah.
And this guy's just joking about his mate's death.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, when like people, don't, like when people see people on TV or something, they think there's like, it's all fair game or something. It's
ownership, like, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
He's public, like, property.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, these are people who have feelings and stuff like that. And it's quite sad, but yeah, I won't go into the whole Graham debacle now, but the whole thing is a bit of a shame, really, because a lot of people have a lot of love for like Father Ted, the series. And I still like, you know, enjoy Father Ted when it's on. But it's a shame that if people feel like it's tainted now and they can't enjoy it anymore. And I suppose it's distancing the artist from the art, not to go into all that when we're talking about morons from outer space.
I know, we've got more important things to dwell on here.
Yeah, but sorry, we went from Flash Gordon, we went from morons from outer space to Flash Gordon to Ted to Father Ted to Graham Linehan. that's a fair bit of tangent.
6 degrees of Linehan.
Yeah. It's a game you don't want to play.
Mike Hodges, that's where we started with. It was directed by Mike Hodges.
This is the overview.
It was written by Smith and Jones. So, you know, this is the film that they wrote. Presumably, this is what they wanted to bring to the screen. This is what they saw, you know, their lights and their face. Up on the screen there, they wanted this to happen. They have full control at this point. And apparently, at the end of this book, when he meets Griff Rhys-Jones and he's going, oh, have you got anything, any like memorabilia? Because there's nothing out there. Apparently, Griff Rhys-Jones produces all these like hand-drawn sketches where he's actually done the, what do you call it? The board, sketch board.
Okay, the storyboards.
Storyboard, thank you, yes.
Yeah.
His initial storyboards before it even begun writing the script. So it's very much like, you know, his brainchild and Smith and Jones' baby. What happens in the film is that we open with four characters, the titular morons from outer space, in their crappy spacecraft, which looks like a trash can in space. That Mel Smith's character is ejected into space. He's playing some sort of space football, space ball. And for some reason, the others just sort of drive off and leave him alone. They end up on Earth, whilst basically Mel Smith's character is left trying to find them. He gets stuck in America initially, and he has to try and make his way over to meet up with his alien friends. The aliens, of course, then, you know, the Earthlings are interested in them initially from a scientific perspective, but they're found to be, you know, particularly stupid individuals. And this is where a lot of the comedy kind of comes from. It's very broad, but sort of like light social satire. So we're kind of invited to laugh at the fact that these characters are a sort of reflection of ourselves. Their interests are kind of quite banal in terms of like pop culture, alcohol and the like. And of course, a lens is held up, I think, to then the Earthlings of the West, who increasingly are only interested in them for their celebrity status. And so really, I mean, that is, I think, when it comes to the humour, it's this sort of like light social satire mixed with a little bit of slapstick. And so it is quite broad and a little bit of spoofing of kind of popular science fiction tropes. And really that's it. They meet up with Griff Rhys-Jones, character, who's a sort of a bit of a wet drip working at working for like a news production company.
The UKBC, which is obviously a play on the BBC.
Ah. And he kind of like takes them on, becomes their agent, and he goes on a little bit of a kind of like journey. He's got a character arc of just getting nastier and nastier. More money grabbing, more cynical. And basically it all just leads to them becoming huge megastars. And it all culminates in a show in America where Mel Smith's character's able to finally reach them, at which point they kind of disown him. And then finally, right at the very end of the film, you finally actually get a scene with Smith and Jones together where they kind of like go, okay, now we're going to go into business together, and it all ends. So that is, I think, the whole plot in a nutshell.
Mm.
Yeah. Sam?
It's a good overview.
Did you enjoy the film?
So, short answer, no. Long answer, no, but with the caveat that I found it interesting and weird that it even exists on so many levels. I mean, I have a lot of questions. I have a lot to ponder about. I don't know. How do you want to do this? I can take it. I can go through my notes.
Yeah. I want to hear on every level. What is going on? Why, how, and what, and who, I suppose, is what you're kind of like wondering.
Yes. So let's go right from the top, which is, it looks like Jimmy Nail lives in a caravan, which makes no sense, but it's getting pulled along the back of the space truck. So firstly, I was like, what is going, like, so the first shot is a spoof on Star Wars, because it's literally black space and the big thing coming over the top of the screen. It's literally the opening shot of Star Wars. So they've obviously gone to copy. Yeah, he's a caravan off the back. So that's kind of the joke. I was all right with that. I was like, okay, that's funny. Right, okay, he lives in the caravan. Just Jimmy Nail. Okay, fine. And then he's walking along the chain and opens to some, like, rubbish falls in. But firstly, I'm just like, why does he live in the caravan and not the ship? And where does everyone else live? Like, why is he just in the caravan bit? Don't know, right?
Good question.
I don't know. So I'm just like,
we'll never know.
I'm like, what? I don't understand why he lives in this caravan bit, but okay, fine. And then the whole, like, first bit, I didn't really get the impression that they, like, immediately that they were idiots. Because so the first thing they do is, like, Mel Brooks, keep going to do that. Mel Smith comes up, like, oh, you're trying to fix it or whatever. And they're like, oh, we're drifting off in the middle of space. Like, we're in deep space. We're drifting away. And I thought, okay, here we go. Here's the setup, which is that something's happened and they're drifting along, right? So this is going to be basically Red Dwarf. They're in this big fuck-off spaceship. They're in the middle of nowhere. They can't get home. They're going to have some wacky adventures. Right, fine. So I was like, okay, all right, I'm up for this. At first, I just didn't get the impression that they were idiots. But also, I didn't even know who they were. So yeah. It was like, there's no like immediate like, oh, okay, so you've got like the smart one, the funny one, the weird one, the wacky one or whatever. It's like you've got Jimmy Nail, who just seems like a bit of a dick, to be honest, and not really sure why. You've got the kind of like sassy woman who looks like, who's done up quite smart to begin with. She seems quite official. And I was like, okay, so she does give the impression that she's an idiot. And then you've got the other guy who just doesn't look dim, but it's just a little bit like...
a bit drippy.
A bit drippy, exactly. And then you've got Mel Smith, who's a bit like the more captain, like, we're going to do this kind of stuff. So I was like, okay, cool. Like, okay, this might work. But I was like, okay, so, you know, fine. Then he's like, oh, the ship's working now. See, I fixed it. I was like, oh, what? Okay. And then he's like, yeah, so I'm going to go play baseball with her. And I didn't really get why they were annoyed with him. I didn't really understand what the problem that they had with him. So it's not as if something's been set up and he's done something. He's literally been like, yeah, trying to remain positive. And then he's gone like, I'm going to fix this. And now I'm going to shoot some hoops. And they're like, dick. And I'm like, what? Why? Like, why is that suddenly the fucking, what's going on at the moment? I didn't get it.
It's really strange. And I think that is probably like the first kind of big flaw, because you're like, I don't understand this dynamic or what their motivation is. And but like, I don't know what you thought, but as the film progressed, those three alien characters just seem less and less likable.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a problem with the whole film. No one's really likable. Like, you can kind of say maybe Mel Smith's character a bit. Mm. They just seem like, basically, I think he drives off and he's just like, oh, because I'm a bit, because I think he says like, oh, I don't know why I've driven off or something.
Yeah, exactly. Like some real like throwaway comment, like, cause they're like, you don't know how to drive it. And he's like, oh, how hard can it be? And then he just, so I was just like, I don't really get it. Suddenly this planet appears, which when you first see it, is this like matte painting, whatever the fuck it is. It doesn't look like Earth. It just looks like a planet. So the whole time I'm just like, is that supposed to, like, they took, like, when they landed on Earth, I was like, but that's not Earth. Like, there's just some blue planet that they're just near. And also, like, they've got windows. Like, they're like, oh, what? Like, they just suddenly see this planet. And it's like, but you can see this big fuck off planet that's right in front of you. You've got windows. Yeah. I don't get it. So, all this stuff, I'm kind of, I know it's like, oh, I don't take it so seriously, but I'm just like, I don't understand. I don't understand what is happening and why it's happened. So also I'm like, so they've left Mel Smith there to die. Basically die. Like, what are they getting out of this? Because at first it was like they didn't even see the planet, right? So they just jettisoned off. Like, he was like, I don't know how to drive. So it's like, well, what was the, like, what are you doing? And I think if you go to the thing of like, oh, they're supposed to be morons, it's like, well, they've not established it. Like, it's just like a wild card. Like, we're just going to do crazy unpredictable stuff for the sake of it. So I didn't really get that, but okay, fine. And then he's just left there in to play baseball or whatever on this deck, which like, makes no sense, but fine. Then they crash on Earth, and I saw that it was a little bit of Leslie Grantham or something in, apparently, which is quite funny. Leslie Grantham, for people that don't know, was in he was known as Dirty Den, who was in EastEnders, which is like one of the longest running soaps on but on BBC, and it's set in the East End of London, and he was one of the main characters in it, and he got done it's probably about 7 or 8 years ago now, maybe longer. He got done for basically wanking on cam in front of a teenage girl or something. It's Leslie Grantham. Anyway, he turns up for like 5 seconds, but they crash on Earth, and I remember the first thing I thought of is they've got like a sign, like a motorway sign for like the north or whatever. and the ship crashes through it, but it's like the perfect ship size. So the whole size of the ship is this sign. So again, I'm watching it going like, oh, the ship's not that big then. Like, oh, so they must be like small. Maybe that's it. Like humans are just a bit bigger. And then when it's like crashing down the motorway, I'm like, oh, it's massive. It's like, well, how did it, they fit the whole, like, I'm kind of lost on the scale of what this is here. But then, yeah, this big thing of where they're like crashing onto Earth takes, I mean, this is one of the criticisms I have of the whole thing. It's so slow. So slow. Like writing, editing, scene by scene, everything takes fucking ages to get moving. And even them just crashing on this motor, which is supposed to be this big, exciting thing, takes forever. Just literally takes forever.
It does go on and on. I mean, it looks to me like they spent a lot of money, so they probably just wanted to make sure they got the screen time out of it.
Yeah, yeah, which is, you know, fair point. So shall I go on? Did you have any comments on this kind of opening bit?
No, I agree with you on all these points.
Yeah, it's just weird because nothing's been established at this point. I don't know who anyone is or why they're doing anything, and they've just on Earth. But I'm going along with it. It's fine. And then, yeah, so she said it's cutting to Griff Rhys-Jones. He's working at basically the BBC, and he's answering the phones, and he's a bit of a wet blanket. And they're like, oh, we've got this big story. And they all leave, all his colleagues, and he's just left there. And I was like, okay. And then it's just the idea that it's like, okay, he's now just the only person left in the BBC. I was like, okay, it's a comedy, whatever, fine. But he's the only character really that has an arc, I would say. Like they've all kind of, as you said, maybe change it a bit, but he's the only one that has like a beginning and an end. The problem is there's no middle bit for his character. He just kind of jumps from that extreme to the other.
You don't notice a progression. It's suddenly you go, oh, he's become a bit of a shit.
Yeah, he just
and
turns up.
His appearance gets a little like slicker, but you have to be quite attentive to notice it, I think.
Yeah, it's not like, it's very subtle, put it that way. So I'm like, okay, you've got this whole thing going on in the BBC, which is just not really needed. It's a bit boring, but it's only there really to kind of build up the Griff Rhys-Jones character, who's not integral to this thing really at all. Like he's kind of supposed to be, but he really isn't. And it's weird, as you said, like the fact that the whole thing is his dynamic with Mel Smith and they only together at 5 seconds at the end is so strange to me. Absolutely, really weird.
And therein lies maybe the biggest problem. Like both of them feel like marginalized characters in their own film.
Yeah.
And then the fact that, I mean, audiences would have expected to see them together, and that's what people like, obviously. All the people that watch their TV show like seeing them together and playing off each other. Mm. So it's keeping them apart in their own film, their own vehicle. Just seems really odd. And then it puts all the emphasis on the kind of three alien characters who aren't really all that strong or interesting.
No, exactly. That's exactly the problem. So I don't mind like the whole bits of like the government getting involved. And I did quite like the British general guy who just doesn't give a shit, basically.
He was good fun. Yeah, he was good fun.
He was good to start with. And then when they turned him into like being obsessed with the female one, I was like, oh, okay, that's a shame. That's a shame. But for the moment, in the beginning, I was like, oh, I quite like the way he's just like, you know, blasé about like the way that posh people generally are about everything. I thought it was quite funny. But yeah, so Mel Smith, arguably, I would say, has the most interesting storyline. And I think there's also that thing, general criticism, is that it's very TV. So all these bits feel like sketches that they would have had that are just stitched together.
Mm.
And they play like that. And also the fact that they've kind of got this B plot, which is the Mel Smith narrative, is a TV trope, basically, that they've kind of taken with them that isn't really needed because, as you said, it's weird that it's given so little attention. It's just something that's kind of happening in the background whilst everything else is going on. But I thought his stuff was the most interesting stuff as well. I think he's genuinely the most engaging. He like looks weird. For anyone that hasn't seen a picture, he basically looks like an overgrown balding baby. And he's just it's just incredible to look at. He looks very British. Like this is what like a typical like I would say like middle England villager or something would probably look like. And yeah, it makes me just quite interesting to generally look at. And if you can believe Griff Rhys-Jones is like the stud of the two. But I would say that Mel Smith is actually the most interesting to actually just watch.
It's a fine specimen.
Yeah. So he's kind of, where he's left, he's left on the ship and he gets like a taxi or he hitchhikes or whatever.
He hitchhikes.
This weird zombie thing.
This is one of my favourite parts of the film.
So this bit was all right. I thought it was, it's a sketch, right? It's a sketch. That's kind of has its like little jokes and then it's kind of thrown away. And the zombie thing, like, it's like you're male or female of the species. And they play up to it a bit and it's like, oh, gay. Well, isn't that funny? Which is, it's a bit like,
That's what, That's why it was funny. It was funny it was funny because, he didn't want to be a gay. So he was checking and, he wanted to hit on the character. But when he found out he was a man, he went, no, thank you very much. And he drops him out right out of the bottom of that spaceship. And we actually get a callback to that scene later. So a nice bit of continuity for an even bigger laugh.
That's true. That is true. One of the problems I had with it, obviously, from a scientific angle, was he's in space. So if you have a door at the bottom, you're not going to fall down it. Because there's no gravity, which they've established in this world. But okay, fine. But I know obviously the fact that he like is able to make it through the Earth's atmosphere and land in America without breaking, like exploding into like 100 bits. Is one thing. But anyway, so he falls into America, and I think the only reason he's fallen into America is that they could have some American bits in it in the hope that it would like sell overseas. Which just
I think it was spot on there.
Yeah, it just felt very like, you don't need to do that, but okay, fine.
Some of those scenes are quite not funny, but some of the better scenes in the film. Like when he's trying to.
Yeah, go on. You're going to say exactly what I'm going to say.
He makes first contact with that like dustbin or something.
Yeah. those bits were genuinely funny, and I actually laughed at that there's also like a thing here when he turns up to that and he's wearing bits of animal clothing and all this stuff, like he's been out in the wild for ages. And the one thing that I kept getting confused about on a conscious and subconscious level, I think, is the timeline.
Like, yes.
I'm not sure where this all fits in, like time, like, because all this stuff has happened and they're still like on the ship. The other guys are still like on the ship. So he's like had this whole taxi thing. He's landed on America. He's been living in the wild for what seems like a fair amount of time. Whereas I don't even think like 3 hours has passed.
Yeah. And that just gets worse over the course of the film. By the end, I was thinking, actually, this seems to have been months and months, but I hadn't quite picked up on that.
Yeah, I've no idea. Like, I don't know if it's days, weeks or months. Like, it gets so confusing. I liked the joke of like where he hides the name of his suit that he stole, and then suddenly it becomes like some kind of salute that they all start doing.
Oh, yeah.
that was funny. I quite enjoyed that. So there's just little bits like, okay, so the ship's been moved. They've stayed in the ship. They haven't even looked out. There's a window in the ship. They're looking out a window the whole time, but they've not noticed that they're in a military base of some sort. But I'm like, okay, willing to forgive that. That's fine. And then they hear Jimmy Nail having sex with the woman. And I was like, I didn't even know they were a couple. Apparently they're married, which I only found out looking at the fucking IMDb page afterwards because they had the same surname or whatever. I was like, oh, okay. But he looks like he's not having sex. He looks like he's doing push-ups on her. I just didn't, when I was watching it, going like, what is he doing? Like, is he supposed to be having sex with her?
That's quite mechanical.
Yeah, but it's like, I don't even understand that. Like, I get this, like, played for laughs, but it's like, I don't even understand. It's like literally just doing like push-ups off her So it's, if by this point we're like 30 minutes in, which is a 90 minute film, it has moved so slowly. It's not been, we don't know what is the story of what's happening at all. And it's like, oh, okay, so fine. They talk to the aliens and they're basically just humans who can space travel. That's the only difference. They speak English. They've left regional accents, all this. I like this the premise. Sorry, go on.
Sorry, this, I mean, that is one of the big laughs of the film, isn't it? I mean, they've put all their eggs in that basket of this is going to be riotous for the audience, that the aliens are just normal humans and they're very dull and dumb.
Yes.
And it's just, well, it's not funny, is it? No, so that's where it falls flat.
Yeah, it's just like, you've taken the extraordinary and made it ordinary. Fine for a sketch.
Yeah.
Fine to have as a sketch, and there's things you could do that play to that, not as a 90-minute movie. Nobody watches a film that they hope is going to be exciting and then turns out boring and thinks, walks away from it satisfied. Put it that way. And then they've got how, like, okay, so America takes over and all of a sudden they want to kill the aliens. And we've proven by this point that they're stupid, even though this is really the only first indication that they're stupid. Like, before this, we haven't really, like, their intellect hasn't really been called into question, apart from maybe Jimmy Nail just being a bit of an idiot. But the other two, it's like, oh, okay, now they're just really stupid, but that hasn't been established.
Yeah.
I don't even know what they're doing. Like, why were they in space in the first place? No idea who they are or were they in relation to each other. Anyway, Jones takes it upon himself to rescue them for some unknown reason. And that whole thing where I quite like the idea that he suddenly like found his way into the inner circle by just remaining quiet and kind of like not doing anything. That I thought was quite funny. But it was a very subtle thing that, had zero effect on anything apart from the fact that he was just in the background a shot. And I was like, they haven't really played that for laughs as much as what they thought they would. And he keeps trying to like send a message to the BBC and keeps getting interrupted. But again, I was like, the jokes aren't really hitting home. And also it's all very slow. Like,
yeah,
there's no like every third line is a joke, a cracking joke or something. It's like they're relying on like 5 minute sketches with like one punchline or something. And it's just not, the frequency just isn't there. And then, yeah, they've got, so you've got Mel Smith in the psychiatric ward and then they do a one floor over the cuckoo's nest thing. And he escapes. I thought that bit generally was quite funny, especially when he gives that big, like they all break out. He gives that speech of like, who cares what society tells you, whatever, you're not crazy guys. You're just, whatever, and all this stuff. And he's got his leather jacket on and he just runs off like, goodbye, friends, or whatever. And he does this very, like, because usually he does this whole, like, Cockney kind of, like, oh, yeah, just do whatever kind of thing in, like, a lot of the sketches. Whereas this, he's gone for the very British, a bit more, I don't know, like, middle class, say. And then he runs off and all the inmates just start fucking about.
They revert to madness.
Yeah.
Start like, smashing stuff up.
Yeah, like they're just, yeah, like ridiculous. But that's the thing as well, like at no point did I think Mel Smith is like a moron or anything.
No.
It's like, what is his, and also he's not learned anything. That's just the thing, by the end of it, no one's learned anything at all.
No.
And I'm kind of getting a bit ahead. But
well, he, at this point at least, it's establishing a little bit of, you know, someone's actually got a target in this movie, which is Mel Smith.
True. A motivation.
He has seen now his crewmates on TV, hasn't he? And that they're becoming, they've got some notoriety.
Mm.
And so, okay, now he's going to find them and hopefully, presumably, find them to go home. So yeah, you get a little bit invested in his character at this point, I think. And that whole scene in the mental hospital and him getting out, you do feel, I don't know, I felt a little bit like, hooray, he's back on track.
Yeah, exactly.
On.
Like we're going, so we're doing something.
Yeah.
And that's the thing, it's like you're kind of building up, the kind of climax is supposed to be like them meeting, right? So you're kind of willing Mel Smith to do it because he is literally the protagonist. He's literally the only person that's moving anything forward in this entire thing. And then, we cut to like the other three, and now they're just like, it's like, oh, they are actually stupid. Now we've gone into full idiot territory, which didn't really feel like it was there in the beginning of the film. It was there during the interview, and now they're just complete idiots. And you've got like a random scene where they're like in a hotel and he's stealing stuff, and then they're just like, he gets bringing out bigger stuff, and he's like, oh, we own the hotel. He can take what he wants. They walk off. And I'm just like, there's not much of a joke here. Like, what did that scene bring? I was like, it's such filler. It's like, oh, I think maybe they've realized they haven't got a 90-minute film here. It's possible. Mm. And they've kind of used as much, they haven't edited it very quickly, and they've used as much filler as possible. Like all these kind of bits that would normally end up on the cutting room floor. Like, we have to keep it in, otherwise we've not got a movie here.
But this is also where the kind of compression of time becomes a bit of a problem, I think, because, you know, they've gone from escaping from the military to, like, their first appearance in the papers to overnight success.
Sponsorship
where
deals.
They have all these sponsorship deals that are suddenly being alluded to. They're obviously very rich. And suddenly he's like, Griff Rhys Jones, like, we own the hotel. And they've become quite nasty and unpleasant. They're not they're not fun. They're not fun characters they're not lovable morons.
Mm.
They're just kind of like a bit unpleasant.
Yeah, very unpleasant. And Griff Rhys Jones, like, his whole thing is that there's like one bit where he like turns his old boss away, whatever, when they're looking into a monitor. So he's like gone from, as you said, a bit of a wet tissue to now like standing up for himself. And now he's gone off the complete other end where he's like their manager, but that's never really been established that they're manager. It was like more that he was just like looking after them and fielding their phone calls because he wanted to like save them from being killed, to now doing whatever. And you've got the British military guys in love with the female one, which doesn't really happen. Like at one point he kills the Americans who are trying to kill the aliens, and then those American people just turn up in the next scene. It's just like, oh, so they're not dead. I don't really understand. And there's a bit where it's like, there's a bit which made me laugh, which was when they're looking at a TV or whatever during the riot bit. And it's like, oh, look, that's outside here. It's like, oh, look, that guy's thrown something. And then it hits Griff Rhys Jones at the back of the head. That's just a bit of slapstick.
Mm.
It's quite funny, but I was like, that's kind of as much as I actually did. And then, so they've got this like big gig and, it goes terribly. Jimmy Nail is just like fucks basically, and he throws up over the woman. I'm guessing they just used some stock footage here and then did some shooting like around it. But it's a bit like, okay, so they're rock stars now. And again, like with the whole timeline, it's like, so they've sold out like a huge stadium. It's like, what are people getting out of this apart from the fact that they're aliens? I think that's also what I don't get. It's because we've established that they're just human, but they're aliens and now they're stars. And I get that there'd be like a big deal for the fact that from another planet, but it's like they have brought nothing with them. So they are essentially just like humans, apart from they come from somewhere else. So it's a bit like, okay, they're kind of dressed up a bit and they're a bit glam and it's about celeb culture and whatever, but I'm still a bit like, so they're doing a big gig. Like I was like, I didn't really understand it. I was like, why are they doing a gig? Like
that's
a performance.
Again, it's all just a bit rushed, isn't it? I mean, we can get the idea. It's meant to be, a satire on celebrity culture. But like you say, it's just weird. It's like suddenly, I think they're like, oh, we're going to be performing in America. And then suddenly it's like next scene. And it's probably like months later, but there's nothing to kind of help you grasp that. Yeah. Next scene, oh, they're there. And they're putting on a rock show. And Jimmy Nail's dressed up like an absolutely hideous kind of transvestite. Yeah. What did you think of his outfit?
Oh, it's weird. It's so weird that he was like some kind of weird kind of heartthrob in the 90s and all that stuff, just because, I don't know, no idea why. That was just apparently what some people liked, the fact that he had a massive broken nose and he was like 6'10" or something.
But this is filmed in a baseball stadium or something.
Yeah,
it looks like they put some money behind this.
I think it's actually stock footage. I don't think they could not. I really doubt they filled the stadium with people. I think they just got all the close shots of the stage and immediately around it, and then all those big shots were just pulled from something else.
That's how we've got that nice big that nice big gospel number. It's quite good. Again, a little bit of satire there, mixing sort of like religion with this kind of like idea of you know, the aliens are somehow like godly or from heaven or something.
Yeah, I forgot about that.
Predicting the Heaven's Gate incident.
And then just when they're like, they come off and Bernard is there and he's like, hey guys, and he's all like fucked up. He's been on this massive journey. I don't understand why.
Mel Smith. I forgot that was one. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't understand. Yeah,
this was great. Finally, Mel Smith has finally.
Yeah, here we go. Something's going to happen.
And you're like, yeah, finally, after all that, they're going to help him out.
Yeah. And what it's a complete anti-climax that you've built the whole film building up to. And they're just like, oh, like, go away. Like, fuck off. We don't know you. Go back. And you're like, but what, like, one, why are they acting like that? Like, they literally left him to die. And I thought he was going to be really fucked off, but he's just like happy to see them. And I was like, well, you know, good for you. Cause, you know, I would have been, they literally left you to die in space, but okay. And then secondly, like, they're just being complete dicks about it. And they're just like, I don't really understand, like, as if they feel like he's a threat to them and their culture. Yeah. It's like, but why?
That's they not think he's. Why. Yeah. Well, again, it's one of these things where it's like, it's rushed. There's a few little things that hint at it, but they don't land it enough for you to understand the character motivations. It's basically like this idea that there's another alien, another moron from outer space, and that's going to somehow affect their, you know, their exclusivity and affect their status. So they'd rather he just didn't exist.
Yeah, okay. I don't really understand what I thought it would be. It would add to it, if anything. And then I thought maybe they don't want to see him because they left him to die and they're afraid he's going to get some kind of revenge. So when he's all like open arms, it's like, okay, here we go. And yeah, that just kind of dies a death. And then this huge, big spaceship turns up. And I thought it was just quite cool, the fact that it's like some rental company have turned up to just like take them back, and the way that they've kind of mixed the epic, you know, universal aspect of this with the very small British nature of it, I quite liked. And the way they go back, and they don't even fucking get Bernard. They've literally just seen him, be like, all right, come on, let's go back home. Like, fuck it. Like, you were our captain. You fixed our ship and all this stuff. But for some reason, throughout the whole thing, they just hate him. And I just have literally no idea why. And he's left there. He's just left on Earth. And he walks up for Griffith Jones. And Griffith Jones is like, oh, don't worry, we'll do it. But I'm like, if Bernard could be anyone. Like, we like, oh, he's an alien, he's going to make money off him. It's like, but there's not been anything to establish that. Like, he wasn't on the spaceship. He doesn't have any alien stuff about him, but unless he has like some alien knowledge, which he might do, but it's not been, it's not like, he could just be fucking Joe Bloggs. Like, there's nothing, do you know what I mean? I was just like, how is he going to make money off him? I don't get it.
Well, maybe you're querying that a little too deeply. Basically, the only person who knows that he's an alien is Griff Rhys-Jones' character, because he's the only person who saw that interaction in the dressing room. So he knows he's an alien. And I think we can assume that he'll have some kind of alien-y information. The rest of the world knows that there's a fourth alien. Because that's the important thing. They mention it. They mention it on a chat show, don't they? They blurt it out. And Griff Rhys-Jones is really annoyed because he's like, why did you mention there's another alien? Because then, you know, that reduces your star quality. Right. So that's why they don't want him to show up, and that's why they shun him when he does.
Right, and that's why
then, like, the Griff Rhys-Jones character is totally two-faced, because then it's like, and then that's where the humour is meant to be at the end. It's like, oh, they've just suddenly vanished off again in space. So now he's like, ah, hello, I know who you are. Maybe we should do a little deal. And then it's kind of like they go off into the sunset. And you're meant to, I think maybe you're meant to be like, ah, oh, great, they're united, Smith and Jones, finally.
Yeah.
And
at the end of the movie,
they'll go off and they'll be a successful union between those two characters, but it's just not very satisfying. It's not very funny.
No,
and it still feels a bit, it's like a nasty taste in your mouth, really.
Yeah. I mean, it's just how much I don't get. Honest to God, I don't know why they were on that ship. Like, were they crew? Like, who are they? Like, were they on a holiday together? Honestly, I don't know. Like, what was that
he
ship?
He ponders.
It's a rental then. Yeah. They rented it.
I suppose so. John Spira in a caravan.
Sorry.
Yeah. He ponders a lot of these questions.
Right.
And I think that's why he's obsessed with it, because he would have seen this loads and loads and loads of times as a kid, and he's still got these questions. And because nobody's talking about the film, he can't find any answers to them.
Yeah, well, we're doing it. and that's kind of like the whole film. And then it goes into the song. And what I love about, and this is kind of, you know, in parallel to what I was saying earlier, is that it feels very TV. And this song, as catchy as it is, it's basically a TV theme. It's got the classic thing where the cast are singing it, which is very of that time. A gang vocal is what they usually call it, which is where they all just kind of, it doesn't matter if you're in tune or not, it's just a whole bunch of you like singing along with the theme, a bit of a sing-along. And yeah, the way they've tried to make it, it literally just sounds like a TV show theme song. And that's why it's a TV, it's people who don't know how to write for film making a film. They know how to do TV, sketch shows and all this stuff. They don't know how to, and that's why, you know, people shouldn't be allowed to do that. And I know they said that them and the director just didn't get on during the edit of how this should look. And you can tell, I can't imagine the director looking at this. I mean, as you said, he's not really known for his comedy, but yeah, Jesus, like who knows? I think they stuck to like Smith and Jones's vision, and maybe that was the problem.
Possibly, yeah. Like you said, apparently there were a lot of arguments in post-production between them and the director. And I think Mike Hodges, said they didn't respect his kind of comic acumen.
Right.
But I mean, he doesn't appear to have had a lot of experience in that field either. So you've kind of got guys who have, you know, come up through doing comedy sketch shows, trying to make, you know, their comedy film. And the guy who's an actual film director, but maybe hasn't made a comedy before. So they're at loggerheads, I suppose.
The worst of both worlds.
Yeah, literally. Literally. God.
It's a shame, really, in that sense. But generally speaking, like, I thought it was awful, but I watched the whole thing and I don't know, there's something there which is very 80s about it. There's something, very TV. And some of the jokes and stuff, I was thinking, this would have been funny if it was, I would have enjoyed this more as like three short sketches or something.
Yeah.
Rather than an actual film. And I think Mel Smith does kind of shine, as it were. Like, Rhys Jones has just got nothing to do. The fact that they're not even in the together throughout the whole fucking film is just weird. It's just crazy. Have you seen the trailer, by the way?
No.
So the trailer is, I would say, arguably better than the film, because it shows all the highlights of the film, but the actual trailer is a skit. It's a sketch. And it's Smith and Jones being basically like UFO hunters. So all it is them just like talking to each other by some bushes in the middle of the night, hypothesizing about aliens and stuff, and it intercutting between the footage of the film and saying about how they'd be like much smarter than us, but they're doing a proper like Smith and Jones sketch, like, oh, you know, I think there'll be blah, 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 and all this, oh yeah, really? Oh yeah. And all this, and you're like, yes, yeah, this is what
that's what they do.
See. Yeah, like this is what feels natural and actually works. Yeah. And I'm like, I'm engaged with what they're saying rather than I don't know, it's just so weird. Like, such a weird film to make. Such a weird decision. Like, and Mel Smith's all over, like, the fucking, you know, artwork and the, as I'm looking at the posters and all this stuff.
Yeah.
It's his, like, stupid fucking face. And,
No griff.
But to be, as I said before, like, I quite like looking at Mel Smith's face at this point in time. But it's like, he's not the star of the show. He's, like, running time. He must hardly be in it. And Griffith Jones is in it more than he is. And Griffith Jones probably has about, you know, 10 lines in the whole film, feels like. Not literally.
It's bizarre.
It is really bizarre. So hit me up with some facts.
Yeah, right. It flopped. Wikipedia says the budget was 5 million. Did 1.5 million in the UK box office.
Right.
I know it had a little bit of distribution in the States, but didn't do very well. Strangely, Griff Rhys-Jones claims that despite that, basically the head of whatever production company or distribution company just really liked it and made them an offer to do a second film.
Oh, my God.
But he turned it down. I think he took it very personally. The film was really poorly received by critics. And I think he took it quite personally. I think he was maybe a bit more invested in its creation than Mel Smith. And I think reading between the lines, I wonder if there's a little bit of bitterness there because it really basically just killed off all his ambitions for working in film. Whereas Mel Smith seemed to kind of take it more on the chin and use it as an opportunity to, you know, use the connections that he'd made to wheedle himself more and more behind the camera.
Right.
And obviously that resulted in, you know, his biggest probably commercial success being.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Yeah.
So he went on and did really well in the world of film, international film, whereas it seemed to just destroy Griff Rhys-Jones, and he never did anything in film again.
Really? Nothing?
No. Not in terms of like writing or directing or anything.
That's so strange. It's weird because it's like I often, and I guess a lot of people do, like getting mixed up between Hugh Laurie, which Americans would probably think is mad, but just because I don't think, like I've seen all of House and all this stuff, for instance, but for me, Hugh Laurie was like Fry and Laurie, and this was Smith and Jones, and they generally just look similar in that Stephen Fry was a bit of a strange-looking, larger guy, and, you know, Hugh Laurie was this kind of like skinnier, dark-haired, strange, like geeky face complexion, and the same with Smith and Jones, and I'd always get them like mixed up. But yeah, Hugh Laurie has obviously had a much more successful career.
I suppose they're slightly both more of the straight man of their duos, aren't they?
I suppose it would be.
Since its screening, it's been then issued seldom. I think it came out a DVD in 2001 on MGM. So that's available. I don't think there's anything extra on there. And it, it's just disappeared. Yeah. It is an obscure movie, despite being, you know, a highly pushed film of the time with two very, for British audiences, two very recognisable stars. So, yeah, just a weird... It poses more questions, I think, than laughs.
Yeah. I get it as a concept, but it doesn't work. It's a very short... How do I put this? Not short-lived, short-serving. I don't even know if that's a term. Idea, basically. It's a limited idea. It's what you call it. You can only go so far of it. Like, people often, you know, to use another sci-fi example, it's basically a creatively dead concept. Yeah. And a lot of people say this about Star Wars, for instance, that each Star Wars film... is subsequently the same thing again and again, because the stakes are always the same. They're always at maximum. The stakes are like the biggest thing, have been since the first Star Wars. And you've always got the like big good guy against the big bad guy and whatever. And there's intricacies in between it, but it's like, it always ends on like a huge epic battle that the stakes of the universe. And it's just like creatively dead, because you've got nowhere to go like with it, basically. And it's a bit of a weird example to use, but it's only because I was watching something the other day. I was talking about it, and it just reminded me of this, where it's like, when you've got, they're from outer space, but they're just humans. It's like, okay, then what? It's like, well, it's kind of it, I guess. They get famous because they're from outer space. You know, everyone's interested in it. Oh, okay, cool. And so what happens then? Well, they become celebrities. Right, but they're just humans though. Yeah. So it's, you know, what can they, do they have any actual abilities or anything? No. I mean, that's the point. It's very normal and boring. Okay, so what happens in the film? Well, that's kind of it. And then what happens at the end? Well, it all leads up to this big show. And then they just get picked up by their, like, you know, planet mates, and they get taken home. Okay, and then what? Nothing really. That's it. It's like, where'd you go? It's like, it's just no narrative complexity to it whatsoever. So with something like Spaceballs, not to go on about, because I really like Spaceballs, but the idea, frequency of jokes, much better, production value, a lot better, obviously. But also they've taken the simplistic good versus bad of Star Wars and put their own stupid spin on it. And the intricacies of the joke have been on a very minute level, as in like a line by line thing, but it also has an actual plot that you can follow. And they've not tried to, you know, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. It's a parody. You don't have to do anything. Whereas with this, it's, you know, it's clearly written by someone who has no idea how to write a film.
The thing with Spaceballs, though, I mean, like, Spaceballs is obviously like a spoof and parody. I think this does try to be a satire. It's just that it's not done very well. Actually, the thing that happens with those characters is that those alien characters is that they become increasingly corrupted by Western society.
Yeah.
And I suppose that then therein lies the satire, and should lie the comedy. But instead of being funny, it's just a bit kind of like depressing. It's not satisfying.
I mean,
you just see characters that aren't well established, we don't have a long enough time to get to know or care about, becoming increasingly unpleasant with no payoff.
So here's what I would have done. I'm just thinking about this now. Is Warren's from Outer Space is they, you start off, they're a crew of misfits, classic, absolutely classic. And they have been paid to take something from A to B. And basically, because they're idiots, it goes wrong and they fuck it up or whatever. And they crash land on Earth. But they're being pursued now by this like a group of like alien, I don't know, militia or something like that, that's after them to try and get this thing that they were transporting back. So when they crash land and they become celebrities, they actually realize once they're getting tracked that they have to go like undercover, basically, and mix in with the people and all this. And it's a case of those kind of like fish out of water. Is that the right word? Expression? Elements where they're trying to like engage with like everyday human stuff. Meanwhile, they're being pursued. There's that tension of like they're being pursued by these actual aliens and stuff. And you've got a bit of humor because they're complete fucking idiots. And this militia are actually like, you know, strategic, like, you know, doing things by the books, whatever, and all this stuff. And you've got that kind of, so you've got a bit of a play on it. But because maybe because they're idiots, they're able to kind of get out of these scrapes by doing stupid stuff. And you can play on the comedy of that. And then it ends with like a big showdown or something. And maybe like the police come and like the space police or whatever come and save them and pick it up. And but the morons save the day and somehow they've saved Earth or whatever. And they become heroes. And then, you know, and that's the end. And they've all worked together.
And have Smith and Jones together.
Yeah, have them together.
Griff Rhys Jones being also one of the aliens.
Yeah. You could, I mean, there's so much you could do. I mean, like, I was thinking, like, because you just said that, I was like thinking, wouldn't it be funny to do like an Ocean's 11 in space, but with Smith and Jones, but they're just two complete idiots and they're like trying to get the crew together or whatever. They're doing like the Brad Pitt Clooney thing and all this stuff and trying to do something like that. Like, there's so much, you know, it's just so much you could have done, but it's just like, they've literally taken the most boring aspect, the most boring angle of this story, and tried to expand it over 90 minutes with Jimmy Nail.
Oh god,
like, who are they? Who are these guys?
They're morons.
But like,
just listen to the song another 40 times.
Yeah, I do love that song. It's great.
Should we go to Nerd Corner and have a chat about the song?
Yeah, let's do it.
So, Morons from Outer Space by The Morons was released in the UK only. Can you believe that, Sam? Only in the UK.
Yeah.
In 1985. I'm not actually sure when it was released.
So you don't think it's before? I think it might have been after.
It's around whenever the film came out, which would have been March. Right. So yeah, probably in March. I'm afraid to say it didn't trouble the singles chart.
At all, no.
It didn't impact. There's a 7-inch single and a 12-inch single. So if you bought the 7-inch, you would get Morons from Outer Space. And on the B-side, you would get Morons from Outer Space Dubious Version.
Right. What's the difference?
I'm afraid not available online, not on YouTube, not nowhere. So I've not been able to listen to it. But what I'm really curious about is the 12-inch single. Because if you get that, you get both the 7-inch version and the Dubious version. But on the A side, you get the Moronic mix.
Wow. I'm actually genuinely interested in what those would sound like.
Yeah.
Because that song has been in my head now for, well, like the 2 weeks or whatever since we actually watched it.
Who do you think wrote the song?
Oh, God. Is it an actual pop star of some sort?
No.
Okay, fine. So was it actually Smith and Jones?
It's just Mel Smith. He wrote the lyrics and someone, Peter Brewis, wrote the music.
I thought you could definitely be more involved because he does his
You can hear him, can't you?
Yeah, in the chorus bit.
And you can definitely hear Mel Smith in there as well. Mel Smith had a big hit single, you know, with Kim Wilde, didn't he? Mel and Kim.
Oh my God. I think
they did a cover of Rockin' Around the Christmas Tree. I think. Is that right?
Oh my God. Yeah, I think that's right.
Yeah.
Fucking hell, yeah, that would have been them. Sorry.
Sorry,
Mel Smith.
Mel Smith, an established pop act. So how this didn't land on the charts, I do not know. on Discogs, very few people own up to having a copy of either of these. Only 12 people claim to have the 12-inch, and 28 people say they have the 7-inch. So you'd think maybe this could be a valuable record, but unfortunately nobody wants it. So you can pick up a 7-inch for 49p.
Oh, wow. You should do it.
Shall I get the 12-inch and have a listen to the Moronic Mix?
Yeah.
I'll rip it and put it online. No one seems to care. Whoever owns the intellectual property in this film does not seem to care or see any value in it, because there's about four different versions of it uploaded to YouTube.
Yeah, that's a problem. I don't think anyone's bothered to take it down. What is it, DMCP or whatever the fuck it's called? The algorithms don't cater for morons from outer space.
Exclusions, tick, moron from outer space. Yeah. So yeah, I mean, that's it. That is the obscure little bit of nerdy morons trivia that I've got. There's very little out there.
Yeah. I'm not surprised, really. It's interesting about the book as well. I'm interested in checking that out and reading about it.
I really recommend that. Yeah, anyone who's got an interest in
anything,
not just film, but it's like if you've got a passion for something a bit nerdy, it's kind of really, it unpacks that, like, where does it come from? What feeds it? And what are some of the strange lengths I'll go to service it?
Yeah.
There's a good bit as well where he actually, for his job working for the BFI, he has to interview Mike Hodges. And he's like talking to his boss about it and obviously making a list of, like, you know, these are the topics I'll ask him about. And he's thinking, like, can I shoehorn morons from outer space into it?
Yeah,
and like he's like, dare I even broach this with my boss? So he's constantly at kind of like odds of like, do I divulge to people that this is like my favorite film and risk like my professional my professional credentials? But at the same time, like he really wants to explore it with people. He wants people to love it, and like he does like a party, like gets a few friends around. And like the whole time he's like, oh my God, are they going to like it? Are they going to hate it? Are they going to like it? So it's quite cool. I think since that book came out, he's actually managed to have it screened at the Prince Charles in Leicester Square.
It's a good place to have
it. I think, yeah, and like got Griff Rhys-Jones to come down and maybe even Mike Hodges as well, I think, to do a bit of a Q&A.
Wow. Well, good on him for doing it.
Yeah.
Cool. I guess we'll give our final reviews. Whose turn is it to do a voice?
Surely that's you.
I think it might be me, because I think you did the giant, didn't you? Did I say to do the giant?
Yeah, I think, yeah, it's you. It's you.
All right, go on then.
Jimmy Now?
Oh, fucking hell. He's a Geordie. It's funny, because I saw pictures of him, because I typed his name when I was Googling stuff for this, and I didn't realise he's like best mates with Sting. Basically, I was like, what the fuck is he like with Sting? It's because they're both from fucking Newcastle, aren't they? And and all this Newcastle United football team.
I can imagine them being tight.
Yeah.
I can actually imagine them collaborating on an album.
Yeah. It's the kind of thing, like Jimmy Nail just does his like deep Geordie croon. That's just what he does. You know, which is what a lot of actors who can't really sing actually do. So Jimmy Nail. No, yeah, kind of. I can't really do Geordie. So, Jimmy, he's a bit deep. I don't know if this is going to work.
You can always fall back on she's lying.
Well, she's lying. So he says that in the whole fucking film. Why does she do? What's he saying? Why does she declare? It's not declare though. Pretend. Why does she pretend? Oh God! Okay.
Ain't no doubt. It's plain to see. A woman like you is no good to me.
Fucking hell! All right, Jimmy Neil. So more on some outer space has to be one of the worst sci-fi films I've ever seen. And I can't say that I've ever even seen films like 2001, but a space odyssey. But I was in war on some outer space. And I think 2001 can go fuck off, because Morons from Outer Space is the best and the worst of British sci-fi. Thank you. That was awful.
Thanks, Jimmy.
I need to work on my Geordie. Do you reckon Jimmy knows his real name?
Well, I've never thought about it. I just assumed it was, but maybe not.
God, he's an ugly bastard, isn't he?
I'm looking at the picture of him on the back cover of the single, and they're in their attire from their big American rock concert, and he just looks so bad. He looks a bit like Beetlejuice.
Oh yeah, I know what you mean.
If he'd been smacked in the face with a shovel.
It's weird that he would just clean himself up a little bit and basically just become a bit of a heartthrob only 10 years later.
Yeah. Spender.
Yeah. Dan, what's your final review?
I just find it a bewildering and puzzling film. I won't say, I didn't hate it. For its duration, I endured it.
Right.
And at some points, I thought, I'm enjoying this and being entertained. But mostly I found myself thinking, why? Why have they done that? And why are they doing this? Both the characters and the people behind the decision making. Just a hugely disappointing flop, but I think an interesting curiosity for anyone who likes digging around in the drawer of forgotten films, especially anything to do with British comedy.
Well, I think this is the most anyone's talked about anything Smith and Jones have done for probably the last two decades. I guess we should check out some of the other reviews and see what other people thought.
I hate it.
So, bang, straight on Wikipedia. The Observer called the film so embarrassingly unfunny, I often felt like crawling under my seat.
Yeah. It was cringe. There's some really cringe bits in there.
IMDb, where the film enjoys a 4.5 rating.
Higher than I thought it'd get, but okay.
D. Orton says, very, very silly, but a favourite. More on some outer space is ridiculous. The humour at first glance is very lowbrow. Look beneath the surface, and the movie is rife with satire and irony. The characters are absurd, but believable in the context of their world. The real triumph of the film are the subtlety of much of the gags. It takes familiar themes of human life and extrapolates them to their most ridiculous conclusion. It is extremely silly, but I never tire of watching it.
He must be talking about the scene with the zombie.
I did love that. Underrated classic, says S. Stribble.
Stribble.
Stribble. I first saw War on Some Outer Space on cable television when I was 12 years old. 1986. Recently, I spotted it for sale on DVD. I thought, I can't pass up owning this cinematic masterpiece. So how does it look now that I am older and more sophisticated, or at least just older? It's 100 times funnier now. I actually get the jokes I didn't when I was 12, because I've seen the other movies they reference, Cuckoo's Nest, etc.
Mm-hmm.
I also have a better eye for subtlety and timing.
Good.
There's a lot more to this film than there appears to be at first viewing. Not to mention the nice part where the aliens are brought down to Earth, metaphorically speaking. You have seen Monty Python and the Holy Grail 2,000 times and are sick to death of it, well, go and watch it again. But after that, see Morons from Outer Space.
That's his timing coming in there. See what he's done there.
Every scene is like a small sketch and will actually get funnier with repeated viewings, much like Python. Favourite scenes? The therapy at the psycho ward with the Iron Maiden record. And the sneeze inside the space helmet. Classic.
That sneeze seemed to be, when I was Googling it, that was one of the first things that came up. More into amount of space, you know, on the Google thing, said sneeze.
Yeah.
I was like, was that such a big, is that funny? Okay, cool.
They seem to have hung their hat on like that for promoting the whole film.
Weird.
Here's a 10 out of 10.
Mm.
Very, very smart and funny. This movie takes aim at both Hollywood and its alien flicks, and more importantly, British cinema's unfortunate marketing subordination to same. Special effects, cast, acting and production values are excellent, proving that big budget Hollywood can at least be replicated in a lampoon genre. Contrary to nearly every paid critic's review, it is well written. No American or British icon escapes unscathed. The US critics really killed it. And frankly, I don't know what Hodges did to deserve that kind of undeserved malice. It's akin to the politically correct fallout from A Fish Called Wanda. Feel free to go there if you will. It's one of those small British films that people who enjoy silly and dark humour, satire and understatement, and simply well-made good-looking spoofs, this is one of those. It is dead on target. Enjoy the payback from a great, unassuming film that Hollywood made sure was dead on arrival.
Right. Well,
so a conspiracy.
Yeah, I don't really understand that.
Hollywood killed it.
Yeah, but sometimes it's like, I think I've given, you know, obviously we both have like valid reasons as to why it doesn't, why it's not structurally sound as a film, basically. I mean, people just like, it's like a conspiracy from Hollywood. It's like, well, it's not, is it really though? Like a bad film is just a bad film and you can still like it, but it's like, why has it got to be like, no, it was kept, you know, the world is wrong, whatever. I'm right, the world is wrong. Everyone else is wrong. it feels a bit silly.
It was too close to the bone.
Oh yeah, exactly.
Hollywood had to take it down.
Stupid. Any other, you know?
Yeah, highlights? I'll give you a few bad ones.
Yeah.
Mystic Man on Amazon gives it 1 star. A film for morons. Dire movie. Not enough from the brilliant Smith. Jones looks unmotivated by the script and far too much of the awful Jimmy Nail.
Someone say my name.
And a 2 out of 10 here, a review from McCarthy Stewart titled Embarrassing. It's not often that you see a film that is pure, unmitigated crap. This is one of them. Hell, even the 2 out of 10 rating is generous. The humour used is film is unspeakably infantile. Some of it, though, is very much of its time. There are some sly digs at the cults of celebrity and Britain in the 1980s. The only thing in this film that did it for me was Mel Smith's slightly sympathetic role as the unfortunate alien, Bernard. While we're on the subject, I don't even know why Smith and his co-star, Griff Rhys-Jones, ever bothered making this piece of trash in the first place. One major turn-off for me was the rather gaudy, tacky, cheaply made look of the film. In fact, the whole thing looks rather false and plastic. Compared to Morons from Outer Space, director Mike Hodges' previous effort of the decade, Flash Gordon, looks like a BAFTA award-winning masterpiece. If you've got nothing else better to do, I really would not recommend renting this film.
Very, very wise words there, I feel.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I guess that's it really, isn't it?
Yeah, there's not much more to say about this. It's not good.
No, bit of a shame. It could have done more with it. And yeah, I'd be interested in just, yeah, the writing of it, like, what made them think this was a good idea? Like, did they have any help? Did they just have that arrogance to think that they could just sit and do this because they've done TV for how long? Like,
I think they did. I think Griff reached, I think he held his hands up actually in that interview and said, I didn't know what I was doing.
Right.
And carries a lot of it. Because you can look at all the problems throughout, but it does come back to like, it's a bad script from the start. I mean, it's a bad idea from the start.
Yeah. Yeah. It's awful.
Flawed from the beginning.
Oh, well. Oh, well.
What are we doing next time?
Next week, let's have a look. I'll press the magical button and it's one of our favourites, Dan. It's a music one, I should say. And it's Tears for Fears, The Hurting. The hurt. And lovely. That is exciting because...
Yeah.
That's, I think I can safely say that that's in our top albums of all time, both of us.
That is, yeah, definitely top 10 for me.
Mm. So, so we'll cover that next week and we'll go through the tracks and a bit about the album as much as we can. And that should be good fun. So, guys, as always, go to anewwinter.net. to check out some of the other podcast shows we do on the A New Winter Podcast Network. Dan, where can people find you?
They can go on Instagram or they can go on YouTube and look for Dreadful Dan's discs.
Big old discs. The DDC, as opposed
to mostly 12 inches.
DDC. Yes. Yeah. Yes. Sorry. 12 inch discs.com. No, don't go there.
Rendered in black vinyl.
Yeah. But it does have different, it's all colours. And there might be some extra special colourful splashes in there. You never know. yes. And as, again, you guys can get on the list, give us stuff that you want to hear us talk about. Again, tweet us New Winter, write to us newwinterpodcast@gmail.com, or you can go to the oddcastoddballs@gmail.com, Instagram and New Winter, just hit us a message. You go like, could you stick this on your list and we'll put it onto the randomizer, and if we land on it, then we will talk about it, and you guys have that power, so do it. Anyway, thanks for listening and we'll see you next time. Goodbye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to Oddcast Movies, Music and Gaming. If you want to get in touch with us or get a movie, album or game put on our list to discuss, then email us at oddcastoddballs@gmail.com or anewwinterpodcast@gmail.com. This is part of a New Winter Podcast Network, so head on over to anewwinter.net to check out our other shows. You can also follow us on Instagram @anewwinter, Twitter @anewwinter, and you can head on over to our Patreon page, patreon.com/anewwinter. Thanks for listening and see you again soon.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Hey, marketers. Want a matchmaker to set you up with your perfect audience? Well, look no further. Get intimate right away with host-read sponsorships with Acast. Use Acast's self-serve ad platform to search and partner up with a podcaster or two from our network of more than 100,000 shows. Have them sing your praises in their own words. And get their listeners ready to be wooed into loyal customers. It's the ultimate loving endorsement. Book host-read sponsorships with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.